Welcome to this episode of Real Space Strategy. I'm your host, Christopher Stone, Senior Fellow for Space Deterrence and Warfighting at the National Institute for Deterrence Studies in Washington, D.C. Real Space Strategy exists to provide you, the listener, a reality check on U.S. space policy and strategy, while giving you insight into the processes required to achieve a credible deterrent and warfighting posture for the United States Space Force. The views expressed by the host and guests in Real Space Strategy are those of the host and guests and are not to be attributed or considered part of any government entity or private sector company. Recently, NOAA's FY 2026 budget proposal stated its intention to terminate federal funding for the Traffic Coordination System for Space, also known as TRACS. It was reported in the press that internal memos in April revealed that the Trump administration's designs to push the system into the private sector, with the congressional justification document formalizing the agency's plan. The proposal would reduce the OSC, or Office of Space Commerce's, budget to $10 million, down from about $65 million back in 2024. So coming out of Space Policy Directive 3 during the first Trump administration, TRACS's goal was to create a one-stop shop for commercial and civil space operators for space situational awareness data to ensure conjunction avoidance, otherwise known as prevention of collisions. And the DoD Space Surveillance Network would then be focused primarily on addressing the threats to U.S. assets versus being the global space traffic cop. Not everyone is convinced that this is the right way ahead for space traffic coordination, the canceling of TRACS, that is, and conjunction avoidance efforts. Richard DeBilo, OSC's director under the Biden administration, has been outspoken recently about the proposed cuts and says that the plan is due to a fundamental misunderstanding, quote-unquote, of TRACS, the system. He said, quote, DoD lacks both the institutional focus and the capacity to manage safety across a rapidly expanding commercial sector. No single company offers a unified authoritative capability that can support the broader public interest or meet global coordination needs. That's precisely why TRACS was created, end quote. So today on the podcast, we will discuss the issue of space traffic coordination, formerly space traffic management, at a more strategic level, and what a best way forward might look like. Should it be all commercial, all government, a mixed public-private partnership of some kind? And joining me to discuss this is Jim Cooper, no stranger to the podcast, from ComSpoc and former fellow space guru in the Pentagon, back again today. So, Jim, glad to have you with us again on podcast.
Hi. Thanks to you, and happy to be here.
Awesome. So, with recent news of the White House working to cancel the TRACS system, do you think that this changes the dynamics of the commercial world's contribution to space situational awareness or space domain awareness? And obviously, the Space Data Association has been around a while. Spacetrack.org was the DoD's contribution for a while. What does this potential change to the plan possibly mean if it goes forward?
Yeah, so if it goes forward, right? So that's probably the first point to address, right? So we're looking at the president's budget proposal that will be up on Hill. In fact, I was up on the Hill today. And they were weighing in on this as the Senate CJS subcommittee was marking up their CJS appropriations bill, which got very intricately involved and got very complicated. And I think they ended up shelving it for a little while, and we'll come back to it. But the whole point is here is that Congress is looking at this very hard. ComSpoc is actually working with some of the other commercial SSA providers out there. We've kind of loosely banded into something we like to call the Commercial SSA Coalition. We're not incorporated or anything like that. We basically just band together for sort of common messaging on the Hill and whatnot. And we actually worked over the last couple of weeks on a letter. We sent letters to the SAC and the HAC, CJS, on this issue. We had several of the trade associations join us in co-signing that letter. And that included agencies like CSF and AIA, SIA, there are several others, NSSA, SDA, AIA. And anyway, it's a relatively large letter representing about 450 companies out there that is seeking to advocate for the restoring of that funding, right? And we were up on the Hill today to kind of, you know, meet with several offices to present the case on why this needs to continue to move forward and be a funded effort. If it does not, to your question, to your point, yeah, that radically changes the dynamic of where we are today. A couple things in the language that OMB included when they defunded this effort in the proposal really aren't maybe well educated from a position standpoint. Like, I think one of the issues there is that they said that in the justification they are sort of putting to bed SPD3 as if it's been accomplished, right? It almost makes it sound like, you know, they can kind of shut the book or close the book on SPD3 because they've done what they need to do the way the SPD3 guidance is written, right? I think we would disagree with that from the standpoint of the fact that that's not really what the intention was with SPD3. SPD3 laid out this idea that there is an inherent government responsibility to do this, to do space traffic coordination. Now, you can kind of, you know, argue a bit about what that needs to look like. What is that inherent government responsibility? How far does it go? And those are all valid discussions that we continue to have today. But there is at least some basic level and inherent government responsibility to do this and to continue to do this for a variety of reasons. So that was one thing that maybe isn't the best educated position. And I think another issue here is where they feel like they can just cede this now over to commercial as if the commercial market is ready to go. And it really is not. And what I mean by that is that the commercial providers today have a lot of really good technology. It's not as much a technology problem as it is other things that have to do with how the market was formed and some policy issues around that, right? So as you know, the DoD started doing this, and the DoD has been doing this since the early 2000s. Again, all legislated and authorized by Congress back then. And the DoD has been doing it for quite a while. And the way they did it is they did it by offering these services for free. So they kind of set the price of this at zero. And what that has done now is kind of kept the market there in terms of pricing. And it's very difficult to sort of fully realize and fully develop and correctly develop a commercial market for this when that price has already been established. And so there's work that needs to be done here by the U.S. government to help that market fully and correctly develop, which has not been done to date, right? So today you do not have the market would not exist in a way, shape, or form that's actually going to sustain the commercial SSA providers to do this job, given, again, the way that market has been formed around that initial DoD baseline to begin with. And so the U.S. government really does need to continue to be sort of an anchor customer for this, right? And by being an anchor customer, they will help develop that market and bring it forward the way it needs to be. And then several other things will result out of that. By helping to develop that market and by being a customer for that market, it allows the impression, if you will, that the U.S. is in the lead on this and that the U.S. commercial capabilities are sort of the gold standard, right? If the U.S. government is buying it, that is the gold standard as far as most of the world is concerned. I'm not talking China and Russia, but most of the free world recognizes that as sort of the gold standard, which helps us then continue to develop, continue to innovate, and so on and so forth. You're essentially building U.S. leadership into this by building that market out that way, right? So, and realistically, that's no different than what's been done previously on things like commercial launch and commercial remote sensing. The U.S. government was an anchor customer there to help bring those markets forward. So without that anchor customer being the U.S. government, without them continuing to help us bring the market forward and develop it, it will radically impact the ability of the commercial SSA providers to be able to do this and to be able to sustain themselves going forward. You know, you'll probably see some shrinking, some reduction in terms of the providers. There may be an absolute, you know, I don't want to sound all gloomy and doomy, but you could see where potentially there might be a collapse of the entire thing. And then what that would mean is we would cede that leadership to other efforts that are going on. You've got EU with their space surveillance and tracking effort are standing up, and they are pouring money into their commercial guys. China is standing up an effort right now as well. And so you would effectively send everybody to those other places. So commercial would be involved. It just wouldn't be U.S. commercial. It would be other commercial. And obviously you can see where maybe that's not the best place to go on that. So those are the big points right there. The market just really isn't sustainable today. It's not developed today the way it needs to be. It's not a technical problem. It's a market problem. It's that price line, that price point being set at zero, and and we have to figure out how to move that forward.
Yeah. So a quick follow up. You had mentioned setting the price at free, with the DoD handling all the conjunction avoidance, traffic management kind of functions between international and commercial and things of that sort, providing the warning with space surveillance network and stuff. And what came to my mind was the hopefully soon to be defunct policy toward GPS, which was sort of the global utility model, mm-hmm. where you open it up, everyone can use it, and it becomes secondary and tertiary markets, not so much you're not buying the signal, you're buying the tools that leverage the signal.
Right.
And so I was thinking to myself when I was reading some of these articles preparing for the episode, it seems kind of like some of the folks, maybe in OMB, I'm just speculating, but seem to think that it's kind of like that in the sense that, oh, well, the DoD's already shown it. All of our commercial can do similar things. So therefore, we can just create it as a service model, and everyone will leverage the same data coming out of space surveillance network and the follow-ons.
Yeah.
And everybody will be happy. Does that sound potentially might be what they might be thinking?
That might be a little bit of what they're thinking. I don't know how involved their thinking was. I kind of think their thinking maybe isn't that involved. You might be right on that. That's a good point. I've never even thought about that before, right? I think right now it kind of just looks like, you know, a balance sheet act. And by that, I mean that, you know, although the policy for this SPD-3 was under the first Trump administration, the actual funding for it was procured under the Biden administration in 2023 is where you see the sort of the first bump on this, right? So it looks a little bit like, you know, maybe there's some reaction to that to begin with. And then on top of that, you know, the organization itself is nested inside of NOAA. And I think when you pull NOAA into this, there's obviously some battles on the Hill and battles with OMB around NOAA as well. And I think maybe this is just kind of getting swept up in all of that. But your point is actually a pretty interesting point to think about. I'm gonna have to give that some thought. And again, if you go back and read that OMB language, what they're kind of saying is, well, we have the basic service. It's what the DoD is doing today. The commercial guys can grab that. They can utilize that and then just kind of move on from there. But what they're kind of missing the point on is that that DoD service isn't really sufficient for today's operators, right? GPS continues to be what it needs to be from that standpoint in terms of positional accuracy and responsiveness and all of that. But the DoD service that was provided back again in those early 2000s because they were the only game in town that had adequate mm-hmm. SSA capabilities. So they're operating still today sort mm-hmm. of where they were back in the 2000s. Now, they got some better sensors. The Space Advanced Network has great, great sensors. But even there, they're not up to speed with some of the sensor technologies that are coming out today from the commercial folks.
Right.
And maybe even more importantly, and this is speaking from as ComSpock, as a commercial provider of SSA software solutions, the software baseline that they are on today, that the DoD is operating on today, that informs that basic service, is literally technology baseline from the 1980s, right? So you are not achieving the accuracy, the timeliness, the responsiveness, the covariance, the understanding of uncertainty around your solutions that is necessary to support the commercial folks out there today, especially as that commercial enterprise has taken off over the last, let's say, 8, 9, 10 years, right? It's right. Not where we were back in the 2000s, but we're still using and relying on that 2000s level capability for this.
Yeah, I remember. I think the last time you were on either the live event or maybe it was with Kevin O'Connell was on late last year talking similar topics. The part of the discussion was how the commercial people have gone beyond the two-line element set model for not only, you know, tracking stuff, but other things. And I'm not going to repeat that. So if you're listening and you're curious about that, go back to those episodes. But I will want to make one quick note before I move on to the next point of the conversation is, and you threw out a bunch of acronyms. So let me just mention a few of them and what they are. So if folks want to learn more about this, they can. And so you mentioned AIA, which is Aerospace Industries Association, Commercial Spaceflight Federation with CSF.
Yeah.
SIA is Satellite Industries Association. AIAA is the American, what is it? The American Institute for Aeronautics and Astronautics. And
Space Data Association.
And Space SDA. Data Association. Okay. Yeah. So now that everybody's caught up on that.
Oh, and NSSA, I think I might have mentioned.
Oh, yeah. National Security Space Association. Yes. Right. Okay.
And those are all just trade. Those are all just trade associations, which have different sort of focus points in the space ecosystem: civil and commercial and intelligence and yada yada yada. But all together, when you compile up the membership, some of the members are the same across there. But when you compile up the entire membership individually, that represents, like I said, about 450 companies.
Yep.
That are in that mix, right?
Yep. So some have argued, as I was kind of alluding to earlier, some have argued for, you know, maybe we should just have a full government approach, you know, the old school kind of, you know, NASA approach where, you know, there's a government program, you hire somebody to build it, you know, NASA manages it, that kind of thing. And in this case, it would be Office of Space Commerce in the Commerce Department would take over conjunction avoidance entirely and orbital safety of flight from the DoD using their own system, not leveraging any space surveillance network data at all. I remember back in the early days, that was one of the things that a lot of people were like, there's no way they can do this. It took decades to build up this system. You know, how in the world are we going to get that done by a certain time? And then, of course, the others that are typically of that persuasion have argued for a commercial service agreement approach where, you know, OSC, the space commerce folks, would buy the information and not own the infrastructure, and they would pass the data on, and they would just be the sort of the place where people go for the information, sort of like how SDA is kind of doing with the open catalog of sorts, where people can go on their website or spacetrack.org with the partnership with Space Command, and they can find out, you know, hey, where's this flying? Where is this going to be? Would it be more likely, you think, that whatever happens in the future, you know, after this whole situation is resolved, do you think that we're more likely to see a mixed approach because of the importance of this mission set internationally as well as nationally? Or do you think it'll be one of those other two kind of models? What do you think from your vantage point?
I think, well, what I'd like to see, and I'm hoping it will be, is more of a mixed approach to all of this, right? So this idea of a mixed approach would be this idea of, let's bring together all of the best capabilities that are out there, right? The DoD, as I've referenced, is generating a sort of a baseline level of space domain awareness that they then co-opt or double use, if you want, for the purpose of informing spaceflight safety. Now, it's, you know, it's focused on and needs to be focused more on the threat. And as they, you know, as they think through problems and develop additional capabilities and whatnot, their focus is going to be and should be on national threat, not on spaceflight safety. There is some overlap in terms of a Venn diagram of what they would develop over here would still apply to safety as well, but they're not really thinking through it from a safety problem or a safety standpoint. And when they stood this back up in the 2000s, like I said, they just pulled their military system and kind of co-opted it for the safety purpose. But to that point, they've got a lot of sensors. They've got a globally dispersed network. They've got space-based sensors. There's a lot of good data collection capabilities there that I think should be part of an overall system, a mix of sensor technologies. I think you take that. But I think realistically there, what you really want to do is be relying on the commercial sensor data that is out there from the various commercial providers. Bring that DoD data forward as well. Obviously, the unclassified data. I get that some of this might be classified and that has to be carved out for obvious reasons. But you bring all of that data together so that you've got the best possible mix, right? And then you generate your best possible background sort of SSA picture with, you know, leading commercial software capabilities, processing and fusion capabilities that are going to generate the best SSA picture possible for you. And you can continue to innovate through all of that. You can continue to develop capabilities that don't exist today. Right now, OSC is in the middle of a Pathfinder effort called the COLA GAP, Collision Avoidance GAP Pathfinder. And what they're really trying to target right now is a gap in SSA that exists shortly after launch. Like a group of satellites will be sent up on a booster. And in that initial stage right after the booster, especially when LEO drops off, you know, 100 satellites like they do nowadays, that initial drop-off point where your satellite has just left the booster, it's in orbit, but maybe isn't fully operational yet. You're trying now as an operator to lock onto your satellite using whatever positional information you have at hand, lock onto your satellite and get communications established with it so that you can put it in full operational mode, get it steered where it needs to be steered in terms of solar panels pointing towards the sun and so on and so forth, so that you've got positive command and control and don't have to worry about losing this satellite. That's all in that initial stage right there. That is not something that is done well today. OSC mm-hmm. recognizes that problem, recognizes that there's commercial capabilities to solve that, to increase the to mitigate that gap, if you will. And that's what the COLA Gap Pathfinder is all about, right? So this idea of bringing this mix of capabilities together, I think, is really going to be the best answer to that solution. Bring everything together to generate that best SSA picture. We, ComSpoc, have done work on this. We've run demonstrations where we've shown the improved accuracies that result by fusing all potential data sources together, whether it's space or ground-based, whether it's DOD or commercial or what have you, owner-operator, ephemeris. Bring all of that together, because quite honestly, there's strengths and weaknesses in all of that. And one strength cancels out another weakness, and so on and so forth, as you look at all those different phenomenologies, right? So mm-hmm. so I would advocate for, and hoping that's where they get to, is this idea of let's use this optimal mix. Let's not throw anything away just because it doesn't somehow fit a commercial only or government only model. I don't think that's the best answer here for the U.S. mm-hmm. as a nation writ large. I think it's the idea of let's find what that optimal mix is and use that. And in some cases, maybe that's even bringing in international sources for all we know, right? We want to be able to grab international data sources that might want to cooperate with Department of Commerce in the U.S. on achieving that best spaceflight safety network, that they can have that best spaceflight safety capability, because we're all interested in keeping space safe for the use of it, for the use of using all of the great capabilities that we're delivering today from space-based assets.
Right. Yeah. And by the way, for folks who maybe are interested from a space operations perspective, one thing that Jim was talking about, you know, being able to have connectivity with your vehicle after it gets deployed, or several vehicles when they get deployed in the orbit, is typically, depending on the orbital, insertion point of the mission and the orbit and all that kind of stuff, typically you have to wait an hour and a half, about 90 minutes or so, before you get to a certain point where you can gain signals and say, okay, everything is good, it's operational, and we don't have to panic. So that's what he was talking about, that you have a sensor that you, as soon as you drop off the upper stage and you insert, that you don't lose connection with the vehicle, and you have more eyes on and ears on, if you will, of your vehicles, which is definitely something that people are looking forward to having. One other thing I will mention, that you mentioned international players potentially could even be included in a future solution to this situation, and that's, it made me think of another idea. One of the things that I learned about operating in the Air Force, and particularly in the National Guard side when I was doing some domestic space support kind of stuff, is that there is an international charter of commercial imagery satellites, for example, that are able to be tapped into for U.S. needs and requirements. So that like there's a natural disaster, like an earthquake, a flood or whatever, and all of your assets that are currently under contract with NGA or whoever are already, you know, saturated and you need more capacity, you can pick up the phone and dial this operations center and you'll get access to, you know, German synthetic aperture radar and French, you know, communications, things of that sort, and imagery. I'm thinking there might be something similar to that kind of a thing, both for in-space domain awareness sensors and in potential ground-based stuff. Even though, you know, most countries rely upon our stuff, I think a lot of our Western allies don't really have their own system. They may have some augmentary systems, except for the Chinese and Russians. Even for what I've been reading, the Chinese and Russians are kind of sharing and kind of partnering to fill the gaps with their own individual systems. They're bridging the gaps. So that's one thing that popped into my head. I'm obviously, you know, as you mentioned, Congress will get a vote on this And as the old saying goes, I mentioned on the podcast numerous times, is in D.C., the phrase goes, the president proposes, Congress disposes. One of my favorite phrases.
Right.
It's just, it's one of, there's one of many. And because of the Senate Commerce Committees, which the one you were talking about is, you know, is the one that kind of is responsible for oversight of this. And then of course, Appropriations Committees. I am interested to see how this plays out, because as I mentioned on the NASA side and even some of the NOAA side, you know, you're seeing funding going for, you know, the big expensive programs like Space Launch System and Orion and Artemis and other things that just a few months ago was looking like they would be phasing out. And this current reconciliation bill, which is essentially like a budget guidance bill and a overall agreement to get the large pieces of the president's vision going, agreed to by both houses, you know, went through, and it has all that in it. But so that'll be interesting to see how that goes. I am curious, though, what role do you think that the Space Commerce Office should have? I've had some very credible folks I've talked to offline that have argued that Space Commerce Office has gotten too big in the last 4 years. But I remember in the first term that they were trying to become a bureau and kind of detach themselves from NOAA and go right underneath the Secretary of Commerce. And for whatever reason, that never got through Congress. Okay, so if they think it back then it was too small, they didn't have the personnel, they didn't have the training, they didn't have the equipment to do all this stuff that we're talking about in this episode. And now people, excuse me, are arguing, oh no, they're too big. We need to slash that. So what role should they play? Should they be operations focused regarding to this specific mission? Should they, you know, have more civilian space domain awareness authority? Or is it better to take an FAA model that's more about oversight and licenses than it is actual operations? What's your thoughts? What do you hear out in the commercial sector about this sort of thing?
Yeah, I think that where they probably should be would be in more of that facilitating and overseeing approach, right? I think probably today maybe they've gone down a bit more of an operations-focused approach. They have done things like, you know, they bought a building and are standing up an op center out in Boulder, Colorado, and manning it with crews. Now they're manning it without commercial operators and stuff like that, but it is a little bit different from more of a what you might think of as a traditional, let's facilitate the commercial guys, oversee what the commercial guys are doing and make sure it falls within some sort of validated set of standards or rules or something like that, right? I think that that's probably where they should be a little bit more, at least that's what was envisioned for them, right? I think if you look at SPD-3, that really was the role that was envisioned for commercial, which was sort of facilitating and overseeing the commercial capabilities, the market, helping bring that forward, establishing U.S. leadership by doing that, the kind of things I was talking about before. And you know, I've talked with several folks that had a hand in SPD-3, and that's kind of where they think that SPD-3 was trying to go to. OSC kind of went into a bit more of a development and ops-focused approach for whatever reason. I think they are, you know, beta testing what they have right now and probably a few months away from potentially getting to operations. And I don't want to say that there's not some goodness there. There is some goodness there. But this idea of more of a facilitating approach, I think, was intended. If you remember, back after SPD-3 came out, there was sort of a bubbling question about, well, is that good policy? Should it actually be Office of Space Commerce under Department of Commerce that is the main player to do this, the mm-hmm. the right agency to have that role and responsibility? And so they had the National Academy of Public Administration do a study and report on it. And they did, and I'm reading from the report right now, they did recommend OSC as the best federal agency to undertake public SSA functions, space traffic coordination and whatnot. But the report noted that OSC's operating plan to move forward on that was not, at the time, defined by a vision to build a large bureaucratic structure, but rather is intended to set about its organizational development following a collaborative model that places the highest priority on serving as a trusted convener, coordinator, and provider of respected leadership for the larger domestic and international community. So that's a lot of words right there, but basically the idea there was NAPA was saying that, you know, what OSC is trying to do here is in line with SPD3 in more of a facilitating and oversight approach and collaborating with commercial, fully leveraging commercial, maybe through something like a public-private partnership, and not going down more of an ops-focused road. They're down more of an ops-focused road today for whatever reason as they've, you know. And I know there's been, you know, contracting difficulties and funding difficulties and a lot of that OSC has had to fight for. And I'm thankful that they fought through all of that stuff, obviously, because we want to work with them on this. But it has resulted, I think, in maybe an approach that wasn't quite what was intended via SPD3 and as the NAPA guys were reporting out on. So, this might be an opportunity here maybe for the current program to, you know, maybe have some eyes on it, not from a funding standpoint. That funding absolutely needs to continue and cannot go away. If it goes away, this just all, we have all the problems I was talking about before with the commercial market, loss of leadership for the U.S., ceding the idea of rules of the road and all of that to other international or other national players. But there might be things that we could do today on the current program, TRACS, as you mentioned, the Traffic Coordination for Space Systems. Maybe there's some reforms or some alternatives that we could explore that might adjust the effort more with the original vision to maybe optimize how they are executing the funding that they are receiving, right? So maybe it's a public-private partnership or something like that. I don't know what that is, but this might be an opportunity to do that. But you can't do that if you don't have the funding to do that, right? So
right.
So right now, like I said, we've got that commercial SSA coalition letter signed by a lot of those other trades that we talked about that's trying to preserve the funding in FY26 and make sure they've got execution authority in FY25. So these kind of things can happen. That downstream thinking, you know, we should always be thinking, how do we improve this? Are there better ways to do this than what we're doing right now?
Right.
But we can't be doing that if we don't have the funding to do that, right?
Yeah, I have a guy I used to work with. He's long since retired, was an aerospace guy. I think he, career Air Force guy, did space stuff in the Pentagon. And one of his maxims, he had a list of rules from his time in D.C., and one of them was vision without funding is hallucination, was one of his catchy phrases.
Because, I'm going to use so, that. I like that.
Yes. So essentially, that's kind of where we are with this whole situation, is if there's no starter funding, then that's kind of a problem. The other thing I was thinking of as you were talking was when SPD3 came out, you had Kevin O'Connell in the seat.
Yeah.
And then in the last 4 years, you had Rich DeBilo. I'm saying his name wrong, probably.
Del Bello.
Thank you. Yeah. So I'm just thinking, we get Kevin, which is a little bit of IC background, a lot of commercial, you know, advocacy kind of background. And Rich is a long-term, frequent guy in space, White House level kind of stuff. Do you think that might have impacted the direction of the last 4 years from what it might have been under the first 4 years in the expanded Space Commerce Office, real quick?
Yeah, that's possible. I mean, obviously, different people are going to have different approaches to the problem and how they manage their team and what their team is telling them, right? Like you're saying, Kevin did not have a lot of funding, did not have a lot to throw at even being able to you know, build support for or get advice. I mean, you know, who are you going to go to help you sort of think through these problems and develop an approach to this? That in and of itself takes some funding to do that, right? I mean,
yep.
People get paid to solve problems, right? So Kevin didn't have a lot of funding to do that and was trying to do, I think, for what he had in terms of funding. I think Kevin achieved a great amount of stuff and had a great vision. He just didn't have funding to execute on it, right? So then when Richard gets into the office, Richard does get funding to execute. Some of that funding maybe went to things like FFRDCs because those were easy places to put some of that funding. And they're going to come with their own approach and their own thought process on this problem and probably lean a little bit more, maybe lean into this idea of a little bit more government control, a little bit more operations focused maybe, rather than more of that facilitating for commercial, right? So we're kind of, you know, we're kind of where we are today, which is why, you know, I'm kind of saying, well, let's make sure that funding, I love that quote that you had about the funding hallucination, but let's make sure that funding's there and explore alternatives for adjusting the program and how that funding is being executed. But there's definitely, you know, a role, like I said, for OSCE, for government. There's definitely a inherent government responsibility here. There are things that they need to do from a governmental perspective that commercial can't do, right? I mean, yeah. If you're going to go to the United Nations and have a discussion in an SSA/STC working group, which they've now stood up to start looking at this stuff, or you're going to sit across the table from a Japan or an EU SST, that can't be, you know, a Maxar representative or a Planet representative or somebody sitting across the table representing the U.S. position saying this is how this is supposed to go forward. That needs to be a government authority, a government entity that can carry on those kinds of discussions as you're trying to do things like set norms and standards, norms of behavior and those kind of things, right? This is, to a certain extent, why when you think about air traffic control today, when you do air traffic control internationally, all of the air traffic control operators have to speak English, because at the front end of that, the U.S. national security, the U.S. DOD was the one that led the way and eventually ceded that authority over to the civil guys, the FAA, but very much took that U.S. leadership role into those international mm-hmm. discussions as the international regime was being stood up, and made English the language of air traffic control. We want yes. to think through that and have that same sort of leadership with language, norms, and standards and all of that. And that is a great role right there for the government guys at OSC, on top of facilitating maybe and overseeing and figuring out how to best leverage, fully leverage the commercial guys and the commercial capabilities that are out there.
Yeah, Space Council, when they finally get going, will probably argue about that, because I can hear some people from the past at State Department would have arguments about some of that. And of course, there are ways for, you know, commercial trade associations and think tanks to have some voice in the process through the observer status model and all that kind of stuff, which, you know, you're basically just giving a briefing and everyone's going, thank you, appreciate it. Let's
right.
go. Let's go have a beverage in Geneva somewhere. So obviously, as we wrap up here, this is definitely a topic that gets a lot of people passionate. It definitely draws a lot of attention and, in some cases, consternation, as we've been seeing in the comments section. If you just read a few of the basic space online newspapers and journals, you're seeing a whole lot of fun commentary. And if you haven't seen that, folks, you should go check those out. Sometimes some of the best entertainment of the day and what people are thinking is in the comment section on these trade journals. So check that out. So with that, again, thanks, Jim, for being with us again to let us know a little bit about what you're seeing in this topic. I know it's an important one, and I'm sure we'll have you on again. Maybe even you and Kevin, maybe we can get on at the same time. And
that'd be great.
See if you guys agree or disagree.
Okay.
So, awesome. Well, thanks again for being with me, Jim. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. Appreciate you having me on the show.
And thanks, everyone else, for listening. This is Christopher Stone with Real Space Strategy. Have a great week. You've been listening to Real Space Strategy. Real Space Strategy with Christopher Stone is a production of the National Institute for Deterrence Studies. And for more information, see us at our website, thinkdeterrence.com. That's thinkdeterrence.com, our YouTube page, and any of our various social media sites on whichever platform you choose.
The NIDS Podcasting Network.